I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
I mean, you can't probably come up with too many weekends. I'm sure there are a couple probably, you know, as you get into the fall with college football and everything going on at once. But the amount of sports that's going on that's compelling across the stratosphere in this country this weekend is really kind of crazy. We have the Belmont Stakes, the NBA playoffs, the NHL finals, obviously Major League Baseball. You have big race over across the river at Gateway. That's what we're going to talk about right now. Chris Blair is here, the Executive Vice President and General Manager of Worldwide Technology Raceway. A ton of excitement over there. Chris, how are you this afternoon?
Well, I'm thinking this is the only event that matters out of all those that you listed. So, no, things are going great. We're really excited about this weekend.
Well, man, you're coming off like what is probably the most thrilling finish in Indy 500 history, or at least amongst the top finishes, right? That was incredible a couple weeks ago.
Oh, it was absolutely amazing. It's been one of those we've just I've watched the video over and over and over again just because it was simply amazing. And luckily, I think they left the fans wanting more, and I'm hoping that translates to them coming down here to Worldwide Technology Raceway to get some more of that action. Like I tell everybody, you know, last year we actually had twice as many passes in our race as the Indy 500 had last year. So if we can pull that off again this year, and you got to keep in mind our track is exactly half the size. So to get that much action crammed into a 1.25-mile oval, it really puts on a spectacular show.
Yeah, so what is, because I'm not really good at this race stuff, my friend Kenny Wallace often has to explain things to me, but what is the challenge for a driver handling the track at Gateway versus, you know, the Milwaukee Mile or, you know, what's up in Indianapolis? Why is it different?
Well, when you look at those tracks, if you take an overhead look, and you will see that they are usually pretty perfect in the way that they're laid out, you know, a perfect oval or a perfect perfect shape. When you look at ours, it looks like an egg. I mean, it's big on one end, little on the other, long straightaways. There's no rhyme or reason on anything to do with this oval track. And as a result of that, when it comes time to race here, you pretty much have to pick which area do you want to be really good at and which one do you want to just try to do your best and try to get through it. And so you can't just sit back and just hit your marks and get a rhythm going. You've got to work the whole time you're racing. And that translates into a good program and a good show throughout.
Yeah, because like I was out. Here's the only perspective that I have, Chris, is Curtis was nice enough many years ago to take me out in a Corvette and, you know, around the track. And, you know, we hit that one flat straight away. But when you go into that, you know, that far turn, that bank turn, I mean, they got to hit the brakes super hard, right, just to make that turn. So you're going as fast as you can. Then you got to brake. I think, obviously, the NASCAR drivers are different than the IndyCar, but that's still part of the strategy, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And where you really get to see the talent is these guys have to downshift in a couple of cases to get through there. And so for some of these guys who are, what you would quote, oval specialists, they never shift. And so in some ways, the road course guys like this one because it takes their talent and puts it to the test. And then the oval track guys like just the sheer speed. So it really is. It's one of those tracks that's kind of a great equalizer for everybody.
Yes, that's why it's so fun to watch over there, because road course is so much different than an oval. But you're right about it kind of brings them together. Oh, it's so exciting.
So, Chris, you got some stuff that's going on even this afternoon. And this is like an entire weekend event. But the gates are open right now, aren't they?
Yeah, we popped open the gates this evening just so the fans, especially those coming from out of town, they can come in here and do get a chance to check everything out and get a sneak preview. So tonight it's our free Friday. So we just popped open the gates a few minutes ago. There's a track walk going on right now where the fans can get out and walk around the racetrack. And if they want to sign their name with a Sharpie on the start-finish line, we let them do that. And the garage area is open, so the fans can go into the Gateway garage area and take a look at the paddock and see the teams working on the cars as they're going through some of their inspections. And then from 6 until 7 o'clock, the vintage Indy cars, we have cars from the 1940s all the way through just a few years ago. There's a lot of great historical pieces that are going to be out here making laps around the track, and all those drivers are here as well. And in addition, there's also a free concert tonight out in our campground. So anybody that wants to come in, bring a lawn chair out and just listen to some music, we've got that going on as well.
A lot of stuff going on tomorrow. Let me get to Sunday, though, real quick, because there's a full day and really kind of a full day of racing as well. Even some wrestling out there, I understand, right, in the afternoon.
We're making it a three-ring circus. We want to have something for everyone, so that's definitely for
but
sure.
But explain the difference between, like, the NTT IndyCar Series. That is going to be, I guess, at time?
8 o'clock.
Oh, that's the main one. But then I'm confused. The NXT is the one that's earlier at 4:30. So what's the difference between those two? Obviously, it's not as long a race, but is there any other difference?
Well, for those, the cars are a little bit different. They're more, they're tuned down just a little bit. They're still race cars that are getting up to 150, 160 miles an hour. But it's kind of the last step. You know, in baseball terms, this would be the AAA of racing for in IndyCar racing.
Well, I can enter that one. My car will do that. Can I get into that as like a late entry or anything like that?
We'll let you try. We'll see how long you can last.
Oh, man.
Get you lap. And then we also have the USAC Silver Crown Series, which these are, for those of you who may be a sprint car fan, they're a front-engined race car. The driver sits up in these, and they're doing 180 miles an hour. So this is the fastest track that series races on. So really, for one ticket, you get to see three races where everybody's going at least 160 miles an hour. So that's one of the great things about this show on Sunday evening.
Okay, not to bring up anything negative, but the weather's not looking perfect for Sunday. Any words on that or advice?
Well, the only thing we can do, we try to control everything we can possibly control. And the things we can't control, we try to be as prepared as possible for that. So we've brought in the NASCAR Air Tundras, which those vehicles, they basically put out compressed air. It's like an air squeegee that puts air out at 568 miles an hour. And they can dry the equivalent of a football field in 20 seconds. That can put it in perspective. So we have those machines as well. Well as I think four jet dryers that will be coming out to help dry the track and blowers and everything else. So if we were to get a shower, we can have the track turned around in less than an hour and be back.
Oh, that's awesome.
Again.
That's really cool. I did not know that you had that ability, so that's really interesting. Anything else you want to mention for the fans or that people should know about parking, et cetera, heading into the weekend?
Well, the main thing is I recommend everybody go to WWTRaceway.com because we put a lot of effort into our Know Before You Go posts that we have on there. And it gives you directions on how to get here, where to go, the best routes in. And, if you haven't been here since Curtis Francois bought the track a few years ago, it's a night and day difference from what it used to be years ago. And so we take great pride in getting people in, giving them a good show, and getting them out so they can get home. So
a lot of fun. Chris, thanks so much for jumping on here. I know you're going to have a good time. Since I mentioned the weather, it's going to be perfect. So it's going to work that way, I promise you. I didn't jinx it. All right, take care. You have a great weekend. Enjoy the races.
All right, thanks, guys.
That's awesome. It's on Fox. The big race is on Fox Sunday night. And we, we could use a little positive PR and coverage here in St. Louis. But he's right. You know, that place just, and I was not a NASCAR guy. When NASCAR was like really, really popular, it just wasn't something I understood or became a fan of. But I know that it was immensely popular with the fans. It was so sad that raceway kind of closed down. I had friends that would come every year for races, but when Curtis Francois bought that, and he really did turn around, it was needed here in this region.
Agreed.
And obviously NASCAR took interest and came back as well. But open wheel racing, I was kind of used to this, and I never went to a race at the aforementioned Milwaukee Mile. That's kind of a legendary track up there. And your husband knows all kinds of stuff when it comes to racing, right?
Yes. He's a vintage car racer, so we know a little bit about it.
Well,
and I just know it by osmosis.
And that's what they have. He made reference to this. So tonight from 6 to 7, it's the Vintage Indy Exhibition Laps from some of the cars back to the 1940s. That's cool, isn't it?
So cool. Just the cars alone are awesome. And then the guys themselves, it's so cool to see.
So WWT Raceway on Twitter and then .com, he's not kidding, though. The schedule's up there. There's a lot of useful information. So if you're thinking about, doing a little audible with the family, check it out. Oh, I forgot I have music when I go out this hour. This is my indulgent 5 o'clock hour. I have some good stuff coming up here. We're going to talk about the Belmont Stakes, which runs tomorrow, not at Belmont Park, but Saratoga. We'll explain coming up.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, I do bumper music in the 5 o'clock hour because it was robbed from me from all my other hours during the week for a variety of reasons. But Ethan actually wanted this one in particular. It's a song by a band named Sea Girls. And I bring that up because this is my best tie-in here. My first Kentucky Derby ever, Sue Thomas, was 1993. And the winner of that Kentucky Derby was Sea Hero. And
neat.
I remember that because that was the first Derby I ever went to, so I'm just going to tie that in. But this weekend, it's the Belmont Stakes. And Scott Jago, who used to be a reporter anchor over on KMOX, he helped us quite a bit on election night a year and a half ago.
Yay,
is
Scott.
A horse racing guy, and he's back in Saratoga. How are you, Scott? What's going on?
I'm doing great, Mark. Sue, good to hear your voices. Thanks for having me on.
Let me read you the text that I sent you right before the Kentucky Derby. If you write anything up on the Derby, please share. I like the Florida Derby horses. And then I said, I'm intrigued by Golden Tempo. I also said I'll change my mind 10 times between now and post time. But I included Golden Tempo in every one of my bets and all my exotics. I just didn't have that second place horse, unfortunately. But we have, what, 4 Derby horses that are in the Belmont Stakes? Am I doing the math right? 4 or 5, right?
Yeah, 4 horses. There's 9 in the field. It's, these days, some of the horses that win, like Golden Tempo, skip the Preakness and go to the Belmont. So we don't have the chance of a Triple Crown this year for the second straight year in like the third of the last 4 years. But it's still a good field. It's still an interesting race. The Belmont always is. And this is the only time in the forever that it'll be at Saratoga. It was the last 2 years at Saratoga. This is the final year at Saratoga, which means it's 1.25 miles and not 1.5 miles. The test of the champion is what they call that. But they're renovating Belmont. It's going to reopen in September as a smaller venue. The track will be the same size. But anyway, this is the last Belmont at Saratoga, and I'm here at the racetrack today. I was here yesterday. I'll be here tomorrow. And Sunday, too.
Well, you know, you raise a good point because I'd even forgotten. I knew that it was at Saratoga, but I had forgotten that the distance was, you know, down to 1.25 miles. Because what happens here is that the 3-year-olds run for the first time at that distance in the Derby. And then they scale it back in the Preakness to 1.125 miles. And then usually this is 1.5 miles. And most horses, as you know, Scott, will never run that distance unless there may be a turf horse. This is very rare. So when it's down to 1.25 miles, and I've been to Belmont Park, that is a huge monster oval. The tactics for these jockeys change on this track, right?
Yeah, they change, but even at the Belmont 1.5 miles, which again is the test of the champion, meaning most horses can't get that far, especially on dirt. But here at Saratoga and at Belmont, the one key is you got to be pretty close to the lead, which means Golden Tempo's in big trouble.
Yeah, he's a deep closer.
That's a come-from-behind horse,
right?
A deep closer. It's only a field of 9, but he was... Gosh, he got the perfect setup for that race. And I'm not taking anything from him because it was a great story. The first female trainer to win the Derby, Cherie DeVoe, she is here. I just saw her yesterday. She's from here. So it's a good story. She's from Saratoga Springs, New York. So it's very exciting to have that storyline. Another storyline, Chad Brown, one of the trainers, has 3 of the 9 horses. And he's from here, just a town of 10 minutes away. But he would love to win the Belmont at Saratoga. I know he's got it. He's trying real hard to win it.
There's
some good storylines.
Yeah, when the Derby finished and we saw her just jumping up and down, excited.
Oh my gosh,
her horse coming in. I think that was one of the most fun things I've seen on TV in a long, long time. So I would agree with you on Golden Tempo. So who do you like here in this race? Are you looking for speed? Look, Chief Wallaby was a horse that I was kind of interested in in the Derby. That horse skipped the Preakness as well. Bill Mott, Hall of Fame trainer, on board with Chief Wallaby. What do you think about that horse?
I like him. I don't think you're going to get much of a price from the betting standpoint. I think he'll be the second choice behind Renegade. maybe 3-1, maybe 5-2. I think this is a race that is going to be won by one of four horses. Chief Wallaby, Renegade, the two favorites, and then the two that I would prefer because their prices are better, and that is Commandment, who had a terrible trip in the Derby, and Emerging Market. I hate the names of the horses that are owned by Klarovich. That's the owner. He names all his horses after Wall Street. So he's got like Growth Equity in here. He's got Emerging Market. There's like a hedge fund. I mean, anyway. But
yeah, that's
that
weird.
Aside,
it's just boring.
It's just boring and annoying.
Yes.
Putting that aside, Emerging Market should have a good trip. As I said, Chad Brown is motivated. He's got Flavian Pratt on. It's the jockey who's really good, and I do think that one has a good chance, too. Out of those four, it's hard to tell. I mean, but I would lean toward Emerging Market and Commandment because they're going to be better priced.
So what I do in a race like this is, and I'm really kind of an exotics guy, so what I might do just off the top of my head, just because I like to hit a home run and see if something weird might happen, I might take the two longest shots in the race, and that would, I think, be Vitruvian Man, who's the one horse, and maybe Otinho, is that how you pronounce that one, the five horse? And I would I'd probably wheel the one and the five with the field, and I would back wheel that, hoping for an exacta hit on one of those long shots, and then maybe I'd take Commandment as a key horse and, you know, surround it with some other horses in some trifecta boxes as well, because you want to hope for, you know, and this is what happened in the Derby, the longer odds horse is going to give you a better price, so even if you might not get a good price on, you know, on one of the favorites, like Chief Wallaby at 3-1, if he comes in with a long shot, it could pay in the exacta, trifecta, or the super, right?
Well, theoretically, and in a lot of races, I would agree with you. Tons of races here. We've had a lot of long shots today, big prices. But those aren't grade one races.
Yeah, it's a little different competition,
I mean,
right?
The quality rises to the top in these races, which is why I'm telling you there's probably four horses that can win. Famous last words, but the ones you mentioned, I see them at the back of the pack. Vitruvian Man, I think, has zero chance of hitting the board, just to be fair to you.
No, and I realize that, but I'm telling you, I've seen so many weird things happen, and that's why I would often look. I'll go into a race sometimes. I'll just put that favorite, and I'll wheel everything on top of the favorite, hoping for a long shot to come in. Now, if the favorite finishes first, and somehow one of those long shots, you know, squeaks in for second, you got a pretty good ticket. But the other way to bet this with exacta is, say you like two horses. If you like Commandment and Renegade, box those two horses in exacta for more money. Do a $20 exacta. Not just a $2 exacta box, and maybe you hit the exacta that doesn't pay a lot, but you have it 10 times or 20 times or whatever, you know, that might be. So there's different ways to bet these races. What is your preference? What do you like to do?
I like to do what you just said. I usually do exactas for the most part and go big on one that I like. And of course, if the horse is any price at all, you know, above 3 or 4 to 1, I'm betting it to win.
Right.
Because I'm not going to bet an exacta, and then my horse wins at 4-1 and not have a ticket on him.
Well, that was my mistake with Golden Tempo because, again, my key horse was Commandment, so I didn't load up on anything with win money, unfortunately, and that cost me a little money that day. I didn't cash a ticket at all, but maybe, you know, I got to look at these favorites tomorrow for sure. Anything else you think we should know about this race, Scott?
Well, not just this race, this card, this festival. I mean, it's a 5-day festival of racing. So it started on Wednesday. Today, there were like 5 grade one races. Big name horses are coming in here all weekend long. Tomorrow, you're going to get your Bob Baffert's and Journalism, who was in the Kentucky Derby last year, racing in the undercard. There are a lot of other races. There are 14 races today and 14 races tomorrow.
Jeez.
So it's a marathon, and I am all in. I can walk here from my apartment, 20 minutes.
Oh, my goodness. That's awesome. That is great. And it's, you know, I think I told you this. I've been to many, many Kentucky Derbies, about 15. I've been to a handful of Breeders' Cups, went to one Belmont Stakes. I've never been to Saratoga Racecourse or Del Mar. And those are the two on my list that I'd really like to go to.
You've got to get up here. It's an incredible place. The whole town is lit up. It's like a town of 30,000 people, but during the racing season and during this week, it's like 90,000 people. And the restaurants are great. The track was built in 1863, and it's the same track.
Love that.
What are they doing to Belmont Park? Is it just because the grandstands were just old and outdated? Are they just doing a whole grandstand renewal and everything?
Yep. And you know, they have the new New York Islanders hockey arena right next door. They built that next door.
Oh.
So it's like it's a complex now. And Belmont was just, it was cavernous when they weren't having the Belmont Stakes.
Yes.
Too many seats, too many grandstands. And now it's going to be like a third smaller and a lot nicer.
Yeah, it needed to be.
I'm looking forward to going to see it. It opens back up in September. But, yeah, it's going to be great because you got the hockey team there, Long Island. But Saratoga is a whole other idyllic world that I've come into.
I got to get out there for sure. And, by the way, I've never even been to Keeneland, and that's where the Breeders' Cup is this year, right?
Oh, that's a great spot, too. Yeah.
A lot of tracks to get to. You know, I feel bad because I think horse racing, as you know, is just not what it used to be, and there's a lot of challenges out there for the sport. But
sure.
I still love it. And you have fun there in Saratoga. We'll see if we can cash a ticket or two tomorrow. Thank you, Scott. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, take care.
That's good luck.
Yeah, thank you. That's Scott Jago out in Saratoga. I can't wait. I have to look at the race a little bit closer because, and he's probably right where, you know, the favorites come in 1-2 and some of those long shots might not hit the board. But I like to play for things that are weird that happen, and weird things happen, Sue. I've been on horse racing enough. I have cash tickets on a favorite that fails to come in, and a 30 or 40 to 1 comes in first, and that is a pretty nice exacta if you hit something like that. If the favorite finishes on top of the 30 or 40 to 1, you still get a pretty good payout. So I know enough about, look, the experts are the experts, and they always tell you things, but guess what happens when, like, Mind That Bird comes in at 50 to 1 at the Kentucky Derby? Nobody picked it. Now, to Scott's point, the difference there is, and this is what makes the Derby so challenging as far as, you know, handicapping it, it's a 20-horse field, okay? Anything could happen. You have 60,000 people.
Yes.
These horses aren't used to crowds like that. It's the first leg. It's the first time they go a mile and a quarter. A 9-horse field, it's a lot tougher to get a big long shot in because the jockeys are going to get have a little more say in what their, you know, path to victory is. We're coming back with more. We're going to talk a little bit about a big event tomorrow in Grafton, Illinois.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
It's not as if I get paid to talk on the radio or anything, right? I have a little fun with the bumper music. I have one listener out there. Whenever I play Michael Stanley Band, he always reaches out on Twitter. So I hope he's listening today because I'm playing My Town by the Michael Stanley Band. They're very popular here in St. Louis. We were going to talk about the Old Glory Amphitheater. They played the Old Glory Amphitheater. I know that because I was backstage with Michael Stanley and the band one night out there. And
nice.
I love those guys. They were so good, really. Where did Sue go, by the way? She just ditched out of the studio.
She
doesn't want to talk to her father-in-law.
She's coming right back.
Mayor Mike from Grafton, Illinois is on the line. Sue found out it was you, and she just dashed out of the studio, Mike. I don't know what that really tells you about your relationship with her, but she said she didn't want to talk to you today. So there.
I'll bless her little heart. I'll talk to her later.
I'm sorry, I forgot to do something.
She had to do something in a studio. She's back in here now. Mayor Mike Morrow, how are you?
Hi, Sue. I'm doing great. I'm standing out here at the National Memorial Military Ascent. We just finished practicing my speech. We've got 500 chairs that I'm looking at that are a big stage, tents, just a beehive of activity, American flags everywhere, and it's just enough to make your heart sing.
Speech is going to run 2-3 hours? What are you thinking?
I thought about a half a day. No, speeches, we'll be finished. We've got... mine will run about maybe 15 minutes, and General Helwig's, he'll run about 15 minutes, and Warren Goel, our Native American chaplain, he'll run about between 8 to 10, and, you know, because he's going to be talking about the Native American presence in here and why we're, you know, using the color guard from the Ojibwe tribe in Minnesota.
Well, let's kind of go back here. You know how excited I've been about this project, not only because you do have a relation to Sue, but because I just think it's so cool. I've been talking about this for years. Let's go back to the idea that you had when you were in Normandy.
Yes. Well, in Normandy, I didn't have the idea. We came back from the 75th. We were at the 70th and 75th. And in 2019, we just got back, and we were driving down a river road. And my wife, Lynn, we passed the site where this is now at the cliffs. And she pointed and said, oh, look, Point du Hoc. And I looked and said, wow, it sure resembles it, doesn't it? And I put that in the back of my mind subconsciously. And then when I ran for mayor and got elected in 21, one of the things I ran on was looking for ways to support our veterans and to honor them. And so we established a commission. And as you know, we worked through all of this to get this going. And it took about 3 years from start to finish. But here we are today.
Yeah, and describe what people are going to see when they visit this, because it's really a unique memorial. I don't know that there's anything like it in this country. I think it should be a national attraction. I think you know that as well.
Yes, this is the National Memorial Military Center. That's why we called it that. And there is no other project like this in the world. And our foundry is in North Carolina, the Seagrove, the North Carolina Bronze, they're the ones that did all the research, and they called us and they said, we want in. And so they gave us an entire year of their floor plan or their floor time. And I'm standing right here looking up at these gorgeous statues that they created. And when the people come out tomorrow to get up here as close as I am right now, I can guarantee you there won't be a dry eye in the house.
Can you describe how, because I know we had you on when you were talking about how those, you know, statues were made.
Yeah. In 2024, and in June on D-Day, the foundry came out. We had the 2nd Ranger Infantry Battalion of St. Louis reenactors come out. They have all of the World War II gear for the Rangers and Point du Hoc and the ladders and everything. And what we did was we live scanned 12 models, young men that were between the age of, like, you know, 18, 19, all the way up to, like, 25. And two of those men were active duty U.S. Army Rangers from the 75th Ranger Detachment out in Tacoma, Washington, that took it on their own time on vacation to fly out here and to be a part of this. So the falling man, as a matter of fact, is one of them. So what we did was we had everybody in the visitor center. They set up all their computers and everything. And each individual was dressed in a period uniform. John Petrozinski, my command sergeant major top, made sure everything was perfect. And what they did then was they scanned each model with a digital handheld device. And you could watch it on the computer being modeled and formed, rotating in 3D as they built it. Each one took about 3 hours. And then they took all of that information back to North Carolina. They ran it through all their computers and engineering stuff for about 3, 4, 5 months, sent that out to Portland, Oregon, where it went through a 3D printer, and they started shipping sections back to the foundry, where they then went ahead and started welding those together and then making the bronze casting sections and so forth. And we had to get another company in Detroit because the people out in Tacoma didn't have the capacity. So we pulled in another one in Detroit, north of Detroit, and so we had two companies going full-time. Because the schedule is what I held everybody to fight. I said, ladies and gentlemen, 6 June 2026 is D-Day. It's on a Saturday. Everybody can make it. That is the D-Day. That's our dedication date. And we did that 3 years early, and we held everybody, and we've made it.
That's incredible. How was this all paid for?
This was all paid for by private donations and funding. We've had one donation of $50,000 from the Jersey County Board, and everything else has been private funding. And we had a transformational gift of $2.5 million, which we'll talk about tomorrow, from Jane and John Simmons. And then, of course, we had we collected about $3.5 million. So
nice.
We had a lot of people stepping up with $100,000 donations. We've had people stepping up with $50,000 pledges and so forth. And I had one lady at the Hainer Library. She came up to us when Warren Goel and I were talking afterwards. And she opened her little coin purse and she said, this is all I have. I want to give it to the veterans. And I want this memorial to be built. And it was a $5 bill. We treated that person the same as if it was a $5 million donation.
That's amazing.
I mean, she got a letter. We're getting all of these people to step up. I mean, if it's not just the fact that Crossroads Printing, for example, in Chicago, they came down. Elmer Rhodes is a veteran, and he came down and said, I want to do all your printing. So he printed all the programs, 500 for the morning, 500 for the evening, all the signs at the loading dock, the big banners and so forth. All of that printing was donated. our designer, she came in and said, here's my bill for the design, and we choked, and she says, I'm donating it.
Oh,
Sherry Hickman with Creative Designs.
That's very cool.
We've had, and I've during the construction, we were out here in the rain on that one Saturday mounting the statues. And these two high steel workers from Tarleton Corporation, Andrew and Bobby, these guys are probably about late 20s, early 30s, and it's raining, and they came over in the mud, and I'm thinking, here we go. They're going to say they got a, you know, Saturday. We were going to be working on Sunday. And they said, to be honest with you, if this were any other project, we wouldn't be here right now. But we're here. We want to see this done. Let's go get it done.
That's incredible.
I had people showing up on the site when these were going on the cliff. For example, Gen Mechanical. They came out with four of their people. We had Ethan and his crew come out. He said, look, I know we're not part of the project. Anything you need to do today, we'll do it, because it was a weekend. They worked all weekend, no pay, and those guys became an integral part of us getting up the project.
Hey,
and
Mike.
If you heard that horn, that's people going by honking.
Yeah, that's good, though. That's good. I love
that's
it.
That's awesome.
Talk
about who's going to be there tomorrow. I know you've got a couple of special guests who will be there who are vets at World War II.
First off, my guest speaker, I'll be the main speaker, but the guest speaker is going to be Lieutenant General Helwig, who is the Deputy Commander Army for Transcom at Scott Air Force Base. Then we've got two 102-year-old veterans, one coming from Kansas City who was in the Battle of the Bulge, and I talked to him about 3 weeks ago.
Wow.
He was in Grafton with his daughter and our granddaughter. And we were chatting, and he says, you know, I still got my shoulder. I says, well, you got some shrapnel? He goes, yeah. He said, I got that at the Battle of the Bulge and this. So he's a Purple Heart veteran.
Unbelievable.
And he was standing in line waiting for coffee. So I said, give this man some coffee.
No kidding.
Then we have a 102-year-old veteran, Art Williams from Godfrey. He'll be out here. Bill Moyer, a retired command sergeant major, is going to bring him out. And then we've got people coming in. We just had people coming in from California today. We had people coming in from San Diego. All over the country that are just showing up. This will be live streamed tomorrow, too. So if the people can't make it here, go to our website, graftonmemorial.org, and then just scroll down. There's a big button there that says join us. Click it, and it's live, and you can watch it on your computer or on your handheld or whatever.
I got it pulled up on my iPad right now. I was going to mention that because you can't miss it. It says, please join us, a special live stream. Click here to view tomorrow morning. It'll be up there. That is awesome that you're doing that. I'm excited for you. I can't believe it's finally here. Can you? I mean, all this work finally culminating in this dedication, Mayor Mike.
Well, It's this dedication is going to be fantastic. And I can believe it because we've worked it for about the last 3 weeks straight. But I just want my hats off to the Tarleton, my hats off to all of the partners and everyone that have made this possible. And they just continue to work. We were placing the final stones yesterday.
Wow.
Cleaned up this morning, and now I'm looking out at the chairs.
That's cool.
Now, this is the first phase. Do you need more money for the next phase?
Absolutely. This is we got stuff. This is phase one, which is the statues and the area down below, the driveways and all that. And we have to finish up a lot of that after the memorial. But phase two, we're going to be actively fundraising right now for it. You'll have signed. We've got a 1968 strategic assault boat that was built right here in Grafton, Illinois, that served in Vietnam, came back. They built 22 of those here. And this is only one of three survivors left in the world. And the first one is in the SEAL Team Museum in California. The second one's in the Transportation Museum in Wyoming. And the third one is right here back home in Grafton.
Incredible. Well, you should be very proud of yourself. And I know you're excited. I mean, I'm literally getting chills when I hear you talking about some of this because it is very inspirational to me. I've talked about this in the last couple of years. I rewatched last year Band of Brothers, I think, for the third time. And I was talking about this with some friends last night. Just blows me away the sacrifices that these guys, and you know, I haven't seen Pressure. Have you seen it yet? The one with Brendan Fraser that's now out?
I told my wife, as soon as this is done, we'll go.
Yeah.
She's been I said, hold on, honey. I'm a little busy. But yes, we're going to see it.
So Mayor Mike, my 11-year-old daughter actually says to me in the car that I want to see that D-Day movie. I'm like, I'm going to take you if you want to see that D-Day movie. So I was very impressed. Teach these kids about history. Thank you. Have fun tomorrow. We'll watch it on the live stream. I appreciate
it.
All right, take care. We'll see you. That's awesome, Sue. It's really, I'm so glad that you made that connection for us. But you know how excited I've been about this. And I just think it's incredible. And I, you know, I wish the president was going to be there tomorrow.
I know. Because they invited him, I think.
He should know about it. I think, you know, you would hope that the Illinois lawmakers and maybe even some folks in this region would have it on their radar as well. But it's very, very cool. We got audio cut of the day still to come here on 97.1 FM Talk. I think this is my favorite song right now. This is an artist by the name of Stella Lefty. It's got a little of Noah Kahan's Stick Season included. I think he gets some writing credit here. This is a song that's kind of blown up and gone really viral. She's a young singer-songwriter. It's interesting because her father was one of the guys who created Groupon. And he's like a billionaire. She's from Chicago, but she changed her name because, you know, I guess the name of the father and the family name is something like it says left in it. But let's see here. She's born in Chicago. So this is my favorite song. You're out of the studio. This is the one I'm listening to right now. It's gone really, you know, viral on the TikTok and stuff like that. And I was trying to find the details here of her family name because I was reading about her today on Wikipedia. And again, her dad was this big person who, you know, founded Groupon and runs another company in Chicago right now. And let me see if I can just pull this up because I want to make sure that I get the information correct. She's playing at St. Louis Music Park on September 3rd, but my guess is she's probably warming up for somebody because I don't think she's big enough to do that, you know, on her own yet.
Well, yeah.
But what happened last night was as I was tooling around watching the hockey game and I was doing some stuff on Instagram, and I saw, I'd been familiar with this song. It wasn't on any of my playlists. And I saw a live performance of it. And she was just really awesome singing live. So her real name is Stella Lefkovsky. And that's what her father's name. But her brothers and her uncle and her father, they've all gone by the name Lefty as nicknames. So she just went with Stella Lefty. And it's interesting the way, you know, there's even a piece in Billboard today about this song, coincidentally. And again, maybe just because it's kind of blowing up right now. It's kind of an alt-country type of song. There's a great festival. I'm not a big music festival guy, but there's a festival out in California called Stage Coast, and I've really wanted to go to that one, and she apparently did really well out there. The song has hit number 27 on the Billboard Hot 100, number 7 on the Hot Country songs. So she's really kind of blowing up right now. And that's, I've kind of used this segment of the show, the last Friday segment, to introduce some of the songs that, you know, I'm listening to most often. And this one will be at the top of my list right now. And I love how these people just kind of pop out. You know, she's doing some stuff. She graduates in 2024. She goes to Tulane University. She starts posting music on TikTok. She says, I had no plan of doing anything in music. I always loved to sing and I was always writing, but I didn't know anybody that did that. So she graduates from, what did I say, Tulane, right? That's down in New Orleans. She again starts to write some things. She gets a couple of songs out there and then signs a record deal. And she's rolling out a couple of songs, and this is one of them. I don't think the full album is even out yet. There's a song called I Know, I Know that's got a lot of banjo in it that I love a lot. So we'll go out with Stella Lefty as well, but she's really, really good. We got to do audio cut of the day, and I got a couple of things for this, so let's get right to that.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right, we don't play a lot of audio on Fridays because of the roundtable and the way that the show is formatted. So I want to highlight a couple of things here. First of all, Kevin Hassett, because, and this was weird, even the president chimed in on this. We got great jobs numbers today. Like, they were well above any predictions. But yesterday was a red hot day on Wall Street. Today, the market was down like 580 points, but great jobs numbers.
Yeah, it's absolutely a blowout number. Right now, Wall Street just doesn't understand that the Trump economy is really creating an economic golden age. And then another thing that is probably not going to make the headlines, certainly not in the fake news, is that the numbers keep getting revised up. So you remember under Biden, they kept revising the numbers down. Well, we find that the previous months, they jacked the numbers up by another 100,000.
I'd rate that statement as true. They would always do those revisions, and they would not be positive revisions. How about this for Susan Collins? No matter what you think of her in Maine, she is the incumbent senator that Graham Plattner is trying to unseat. I really think in the end, even if he wins this primary next week for the Democrats, I don't think he's going to survive against Susan Collins the way that the Oppo research is leaking out. But listen to this streak for Susan Collins in the United States Senate.
10,000 consecutive votes here in the United States Senate. For nearly 30 years, Susan Collins has shown up for Mainers, has ensured that they are represented in every single vote.
This is truly a remarkable milestone. Many of us try hard to make every vote. Senator Collins has actually done it 10,000 times in a row.
She's the Cal Ripken Jr. of the United States Senate. That's really incredible.
It is.
You know, you're, by the way, you're not getting the best weather to go back and forth from D.C. and Maine all the time. So I think that might make it even more impressive. And then you heard a reference here to Joe Biden. President Trump picking on Sleepy Joe today.
On my second day, I gave a news conference, which is more news conferences that Biden gave in like 6 months. But it might, he didn't do it. Yeah. Sleepy Joe was not heavy into news conferences, all right? He'd take one question, he'd go, oh, let's see. Jim Smith from NBC. I don't do that. They just start screaming at me. But so I had a news conference on my second day, and they said, What about eggs? Tell me about eggs. I said, what's the story with eggs? Give me a little hand. What's with eggs? They said, what's happening with eggs? And I was told, you know, we have the great Easter egg hunt at the White House. And I was told to order plastic eggs. I said, I'm not ordering plastic eggs. And I called this young lady right over here, Brooke Rollins, Secretary of Agriculture. I said, Brooke, get the egg prices down, please. And she got them down.
Yeah, they did that. Remember this from right after when the president took office, Sue? I put this on a hotkey. We haven't used it very much, but I know you're going to remember this. And it really never came to fruition, did it?
You're listening to The Brett Baer Show.
Uh-oh, wait a second. That is not what that's supposed to be. That's supposed to be the cut about blueberries.
Oh yeah.
My goodness. Now I'm very confused why that happened. Remember the woman who said, I can't wait for
that's right.
That was what I was.
Blueberries on the
morning.
Let's
see if this is right. That's my Greek music from when I went to Greece. I don't
very
know. Let's try that one more time
no
here.
No mention of blueberries.
No, I know.
Bear Show.
No, that's the Brett Baer Show. I have no idea. Ethan's going to have to figure that one out. I can't tell you.
I can't wait till ladies can get their blueberries for their yogurt.
That was pretty much it, Sue. We'll go out with Stella Lefty. I love this song, Boston. Have a great weekend.
I like you when you're not.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team. But not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.